Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 126 of season 7 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is the host of the Everything Is Primary Source podcast, Eric Paul. Welcome back to the show, Eric.
So glad to be here. I've had a lot of fun with you last couple of days talking about one of my favorite movies from the 90s, and I'm ready to do it again, even if it's just a very black and white discussion that we've been having with the credits.
Exactly. All right, so minute 126 begins with the production accountant credit and ends with more visual effects credits. So, you know, as we're continuing with the credits, so we get the you know, all the money people. You have the production accountant and the location auditor and the payroll, and then the what's known as the construction accountant, which to me what jumped out is his name. His name is Benj Whitehouse, B-E-N-J. Okay, and you know, I think based on what I found on IMDb, his name is either Benjamin or Benji or something like that. You know, for some reason, he decided to leave it this way. He actually has 17 IMDb credits, pretty much all of them as the construction accountant. So, you know, I guess he's the guy who's saying, all right, if you're going to have to build this set, it's going to cost you this. Or maybe they come to him and say, all right, we need X in order to build this, you know, things like that.
I'm a fan of, if done well, I like inside Hollywood style movies. You know, they show the behind the scenes, how things are made. And one of my favorite shows is Extras with Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant as his, have you ever seen Extras?
No. Never seen it. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It's very well done. It's compared a lot of times to Curb Your Enthusiasm, that style of humor. But it's, as the title shows, the first series anyway, deals with him and his friend as movie extras. And he's always trying to find ways to get a talking part in the film. And actually, Samuel L. Jackson is in the second episode of that show. They're filming a police, you know, drama, and they're extras for that. But the you get to see some of these moving parts. Like at one point, his friend Maggie thinks that she's told by another extra that, you know, she should be owed more money if she does this, you know, provides her own wardrobe or does some little extra acting or something like that. And so she goes to the accounting office, the guy who's managing all the money. And it just once again shows us how, and these credits, you know, confirm it, that what a big operation is. It's almost like moving an entire, you know, we don't know if this Benj Whitehouse was on scene, right? Was he actually on the set, or is he back in Los Angeles, you know, managing everything there? But, you know, it's almost like an entire office building gets transplanted to wherever they're filming this movie to make these kinds of, in this case, money decisions and budgeting and stuff.
Yeah, seriously. It's actually very, very interesting when you look at it on the whole, you know, that sort of thing as things are moving along. Then they continue with more people, you know, bean counters. And then we have the property master, who I just find his name hilarious. It's Tom Tomlinson. Okay, you know, I don't know. That to me, that sounds a little cool for a parent to name their child Tommy Tomlinson.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not judging. We all, you know, but I just find it funny that his nickname is Tom. It's like, you know, it should be like Tom Squared or something like that. You know, that would make a little more sense.
If he ran his own company, he probably would name it that. That'd be a good move.
Probably. Yeah, that makes sense. So what do you know what the property master does?
I'm assuming that they are, my guess would be something along the line of like code enforcement, or like making sure that everything on set is up to code. You know, imagining a city like New York or any of these other places have, you know, pretty strict, you know, they're altering the scenery. Like there's lots of wires running everywhere. There's, you know, lighting that there wasn't before. There's traffic that needs to be stopped, you know, to film scenes and stuff like that. Pyrotechnics. I can imagine that they're just trying to stay within the local, you know, expectations and restrictions. Am I anywhere close?
Nope, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. The property master is basically in charge of buying props and setting them up in the room properly and stuff like that. Like, I mean, we talked yesterday about the lead man, where I guess the lead man has to make sure that things are constantly in the same place. But the property master is the one who decides what goes there. And, you know, they have to make sure that it's always there, you know, because they work with the script supervisor because they have to deal with the set continuity and stuff like that.
Now that I looked up our good friend T Squared and see that he was on another McTiernan movie, Predator, in the art department. So and also Chronicles of Riddick was art department. And so I should have put two and two together and saw that. And also I guess that's what prop is short for then, is property.
Yes. Exactly. And T-Squared has 62 IMDb credits.
Not bad. So, not bad.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure somewhere in the job of making a movie, there's somebody that did what I was describing, that, you know, making sure that they're not violating any local codes, but they have some, probably some weirdo Hollywood name for that.
Yeah, that's probably true. And then when you continue in the with the credits, you get all the construction people. You know, you have the construction coordinator and the construction key grip and the best boy grip. Back to what you were talking about yesterday, assistant construction estimator, which sounds to me like someone who deals with money here also. Then you have the paint supervisor, and then you have something that, again, it goes back to what I was talking about, I believe, on Tuesday, with the idea that you have whole families that work together on things. And you have the sound mixer, the sound boom, and the sound recordist. They are each Maitlands. You have Dennis Sr., Dennis II, and Kim Maitland. So I decided just to quickly look up to see you know, who any of these people are. And so I found that Dennis Sr. was born in 1931 and passed away in 2011 at the age of 80. He has 76 IMDb credits in the sound department. And then his son was born in 1955 and passed away in 2014 at the age of 58. And he has 31 IMDb credits. But within that family, and then you have Kim, who is the recordist, basically, the sound recordist. And she has 82 IMDb credits on IMDb. So again, this is a very busy family when it comes to that. But they actually have another son. Dennis has another son named Todd, who is a sound engineer, and then he has a son named Dean, who is a boom operator. So again, you know, this is the type of thing where you go watch, you know, Dad do work, you know. You spend a day with him at work, and then you're like, wow, I'm fascinated about all this, and this is going to move me into, you know, this type of profession in my life. And
yeah,
what I found out about Dennis Maitland is that he actually pioneered the use of wireless microphones and different sound equalization within the movie industry. And he was also the first sound mixer to engineer a digital motion picture soundtrack. So again, this is movie history, you know, and you have the whole idea of, you know, a parent passing on the torch to their child. I mean, he obviously didn't know that, 3 years after he passed, his son was going to die also. But still, it's just really cool that they could, I'm somewhat envious of that type of thing. That these are people that are able to work with their parents, that type of thing. Like you have the whole, I'm trying to remember what movie it is. Oh, it was Parenthood. In Parenthood with Steve Martin, right? Where his son says to him that when I grow up, I want to get a job just like you so that I can work near you, that type of thing. So that's just, I find that really, really touching,
And
that whole idea.
I
And
can
this is,
imagine these very specialized jobs like this, where that's much more of a possibility than if you're a teacher or something like that. The kid's gonna necessarily get hired at the same place you work. But with something, I'm imagining their home was probably sound equipment everywhere. They probably had a studio of some kind that they worked with. And so you're absolutely right. I'm sure that was just part of these kids' world that they could imagine themselves working with dad for
that's right.
a
Like
job.
maybe when they came home, instead of having to recite the alphabet in Latin, they had to do something that deals with the sound, something like that.
Right.
That
Or instead of doing chores around
reference
the house,
was
they'd.
Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. In Watson.
Yes.
Oh, I totally forgot that as a trilogy from the other day. I apologize. I
Oh,
should have, because
yeah, me
that
too.
was the original one.
Well, as we talked
Yeah.
about the fact that it's very fluid, So just because,
Yes.
2 days ago that was what your thoughts were, it doesn't mean that today it's going to be the same. So,
That's
if you were to
true.
redo the list today, then maybe you would put Indiana Jones on there,
Yeah.
and then we continue with the special effects. So we have the special effects coordinator, special effects office coordinator, estimator, supervisors, people who are just listed as special effects, production assistant, and then they start talking about the different companies. So the first company they mention is a company called Mass Illusion from Lenox, Massachusetts, which
Yeah.
surprisingly only has been used in 15 different movies, according to IMDb.
And what I learned about that one is, first of all, I was interested as to why a company, because, it appears that Die Hard with a Vengeance was their first project.
It's very
And,
possible.
because I'm on their website and because I was curious, I'm like, Massachusetts doesn't really have a very long legacy with filmmaking. And 1995 was not, that was before Boston got really hip and they were making all sorts of movies about Boston and Massachusetts and stuff. So I found it curious, that you would open up a company like this. I guess around the time that they worked in The Matrix, they changed their name to the Mannix company, and then they relocated to, I assume, where they should have been all along, and that would be California.
California. Well,
So they maybe looked around Lenox, Massachusetts, and be like, yeah, there's not a lot of opportunities to make movies in this part of the country, so let's go where it is. And so
apparently they
they
found
ended
a
up
way to
in
do
Alameda.
it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they, found out this movie is being made in New York and said that they'd make the 4-hour drive and, help out or whatever their job was. Full service effects house. So in movie making, special effects, I think, especially in the digital age, gets muddled together with computer effects and digital effects.
Correct.
This is a digital, effects company, but Die Hard with a Vengeance has plenty of special effects, as in like explosions and things like that, but not a lot of, at least not very obvious, integration of digital manipulation, unless I'm
Well, again,
not
it was
remembering it.
1995. They only really started heavily using digital CGI and stuff like that after Jurassic Park. I mean, it wasn't used before, but on a very minimalist perspective.
I guess maybe the scene with the water, you know, in the tunnel, you know, that was probably computer.
That's very, very possible. Yeah.
Yeah. But thankfully it's not overload, because that would detract from the movie.
Correct. I've mentioned this many times. I'm more of a I like practical effects more. I mean, obviously, yeah, special effects are needed when you're dealing with sci-fi and stuff like that. You know, there are things that you're going to need the special effects for. But, you know, it says so much more to me that someone actually took the time to set this up, out in a garage, you know, and things like that.
Absolutely. I think it's it makes us, the audience, believe it that much more, because it is, at least for all intents and purposes, real.
That's right. Correct. So that's just really cool. Right. Okay. So then after that, you know, it gives us the whole list of all the people that work at the company Mass Illusion. And then after it finishes here, it moves into the three other visual effects companies. You have Sony Pictures Image Works, which is located in Culver City, California. Goes back to what you're saying. It makes sense to be working in California at that time.
Yes.
That's right. And like then
I think all the tires, you know, the Detroit makes the cars and Toledo, Ohio makes all the tires.
Right. Exactly. And then after that, we have Buena Vista. Sorry, we have Sony Pictures Image Works, which has 237 IMDb credits of visual effects. And then you have Buena Vista Visual Effects, which have 77. And then the final one they give us here, and this is basically as the credits and this minute is closing up, they give us the stuff from Pacific Title Digital.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a funny mix of groups, because Buena Vista is Disney, essentially, right? And so, you know, Disney's more mature, I suppose, extension of them worked on this. But then almost meta for a credit scene, because that's what Pacific Title did. They no longer exist, but that was their job, was making the credits for, you know, the credit cards. Not those kind of credit cards, but the, you know, the text on screen.
Yeah.
And I looked into them, and it, you know, they've been around pretty much as long as Hollywood has been around. They opened up in 1919, making title cards for silent pictures, and evolved with the movie making process all the way through as you know, they. I suppose that's not all they did for Die Hard with a Vengeance, because when the, you know, talkies started to come out, this company, as a way to survive, you know, started to work with editing in general, not just the cards, you know, for the screen, and so in post-production type stuff. But it's almost like, I don't know, when you... Like if you ever like get to the last trash bag in a box of trash bags, and you throw the box into the trash bag, which I guess isn't, you know, recycling properly, but you know, it's like this, the people who are making the credits are crediting themselves. Like they're contained within their own creation. It's kind of a funny thing.
Right. No, definitely. Again, it once again shows how many people and how much work goes into making a movie like this. Amazing. It really is.
And just like how much money was going around, you know.
That's
like
true also.
And people sometimes will, I hear it frequently, people, you know, actors in Hollywood and just they make way too much money. They get, you know, they got millions of dollars for just playing make-believe. But I'm like, they're employing all these people. Like that's, you know, the millions of dollars that they take in for a film gets trickled down to all these different, and in some cases, entire other companies, that's how they make their money. Like, that's how they survive as a company and continue to employ people, you know, on either side of different projects. And it's just like, you know, pro sports too, where, you know, the reach of the economic stimulus that happens from just one single, say, baseball game, is sometimes immeasurable. I mean, we're talking about everything from gas stations where people fuel up on their car before they go to the game, to, you know, the person selling parking, and, you know, everybody like gets these benefits from these big projects like this. And in some cases, maybe the actors even get shortchanged considering how much money, you know, that they're providing for these other companies.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I still remember watching the credits of Titanic when I had it on VHS, you know, and just the number of visual effects companies that are in that are working together on that movie is just always amazes me. You know, it was the first time I heard of the company Banned from the Ranch, you know, which is basically the guys who were kicked off of, you know, out of LucasArts.
That's a good name.
Yeah, it really is. All right, that's actually all I have for this minute on the credit. Did you have anything else you wanted to discuss?
No, I think that you know, I'm surprised that there aren't more, you know, Wahlbergs involved in Mass Illusions, but I think that was pretty much it.
All right, great. So once again, nothing to talk about on the script here, but every Thursday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Revenge Sibling Rivalry Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventures, something's happened over the course of their life that is somehow related to either revenge or sibling rivalry. So Eric, do you have a story for us?
I was trying to think of it. As far as revenge, nothing I'm really proud of.
I didn't say you need to be proud of it.
The closest. Yeah. Well, nothing I really want to share in that regard. There's a lot of shame involved in some of those kinds of things. I guess the closest thing would be when I, and you know, I do have a sibling, but, you know, again, with sibling rivalry, we never really had much. We always got along really well with all that stuff. But when it comes to some kind of revenge, I always feel that actions speak louder than words. And I remember when I was probably about 10 years old, we had just moved from, you know, a couple states away to our new home. And I was always a baseball player more than I was, you know, pretty much any other sport. And when we got to our new neighborhood, the neighborhood kids were really into soccer and I wasn't, but they kind of coaxed me to play soccer and I wasn't very good. And they would find ways to, you know, kind of rub it in any chance they got. Well, when the spring rolled around, baseball season started, and basically the same team from soccer just transformed to a baseball team. And I was not much of a trash talker. I didn't like to, I always felt that, you know, your best way to really get any kind of revenge, or, you know, to show somebody up was by action. And in our very first game, after spending, you know, all this time watching some of the, you know, the more arrogant players on the team, you know, try to show me up in one sport, it was my first at bat in the game and I hit a grand slam.
Wow.
And it felt so good, not only because, I mean, it was coach pitch baseball, so, you know, it wasn't like I hit it off of a ace pitcher or something like that. I was only 10 or 11. But it felt so good. Like, as soon as the ball connected with the bat and I just saw it fly out of there and everybody was like, wow. But it was soured a bit later because the other teammate that I was, you know, really trying to show my, you know, how good I was. The one that he was stellar soccer player and he knew it. He gets up later in the game in a very similar situation, bases loaded, and doesn't hit a long ball, but even the coaches telling him to stop running, he forced a grand slam. He made his way and slid into home plate, you know, narrowly missing the tag. And it really was like, it started, as far as I could tell, almost like a back and forth for the next couple of years of playing these sports together, of me in my own, you know, rather humble way, trying to show him that I was just as good of an athlete, if not better in some sports.
Oh, but, wow.
That would be, you know, the that kind of, you know, vengeance in a way.
Okay.
That I dealt with at that age.
Did you feel that at some point you did manage to prove to him that you're that you are a better athlete than they might have thought?
Yeah, you know, and it was one of those things, as you got older, you know, and we grew up in the same neighborhood. So, you know, we went to high school together, and, you know, as time went on, things seemed to have cooled down in that regard. And I'm not even sure if he ever recognized that, you know, because he that was just his approach to everybody, is that always had to be the best, always had to be number one.
Right.
Wow. And, you know, we weren't, my brother and I weren't really raised that way. We were, you know, taught to just have fun playing games and not really care, you know, the outcome so much. And I guess not related to that guy, but, you know, I played baseball through high school, and in a more team way, we had a great vengeance against our rival school, which it actually happened twice in one season, because they were always the better baseball team. They were, you know, the little bit more affluent you know, city and stuff than we were, and had, you know, beautiful uniforms. And the opening game of the season, we were the underdogs, which I love being underdog. They were favored, and we beat them. Very close game, but we beat them, and we were super exciting. The local newspaper comes out and not only claims that, not that we won, but they lost, that their team lost. And then somehow they said it didn't count towards the season totals. I don't remember the reasoning why, but they said it wasn't an official game and it wouldn't. And so that burned us up. We got to face them in the first round of the playoffs. And that's when we really got our, and it was the first inning of the game. There was a pop fly. I was playing first base. There was a foul ball, and I tracked it down, and it was kind of a, you know, say heroic catch, but a bit of a diving catch, but I caught it. And our coach was like, after the game, when we won, he's like, when Eric caught that ball, I knew we were going to win. He's wow. Like, something about that play kind of set the tone. And the other team was known for doing the kind of baseball I never really liked, which was, you know, weird, like, trick play stuff. And they would do a thing whenever they got a guy on first base and third base. They would, the runner on first would just saunter over to second base in the attempt for the defense to, you know, scramble and try to throw him out. And then if we, you know, then the guy in third would bolt for home.
Right.
We practiced for like 2 weeks knowing that they would do that. And that was like the most satisfying moment. We practiced all these different variations on how to catch them. And again, I was playing first base, so I had to do a certain thing where I would pretend to, I was staying on first to pick the guy off, and our pitcher, who was a left-handed pitcher, so he's facing me, would throw to me, and then I would quickly throw the ball you know, to home and catch the game. And we did that play in that playoff game too. And it was just fantastic because I could still remember the coach's face of the other team. He was just like, oh, they're on to us. Oh, crap, you know. So I guess all my vengeance stories are baseball related.
Well,
but,
that's fine. That's there's nothing wrong with that. I hear in your voice that there is a script in development for this story. Sounds like it. Sounds like it.
Yeah. Those are good memories.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like it. Yeah. I always look back fondly on my little league years. Yeah. Also. Yeah.
They are formative. They're definitely, mm-hmm. you know, when you learn a lot about, you know, what's important to you and how you want to approach, you know,
absolutely
those kinds of challenges in life.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, because Eric wasn't here with us on Monday, so you know, I'm gonna jam in today the Monday segment that we weren't able to do this week with Eric, and so we're. The segment is McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan movies. So there's only 11 to choose from, but hopefully you've seen five.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go number five is Last Action Hero, because, well, not only does it have Arnold Schwarzenegger in it, who I love. I love the chances that they take with that movie. Ultimately, it's not as good as it could have been, in my opinion, but I love the meta verse that they create with that. And it was a lot of fun, Last Action Hero. So that's number five. Number four, I think, is the original Die Hard. Number three is The Hunt for Red October. And, you know, it's interesting about, because, you know, being a Jack Ryan movie, it doesn't have Harrison Ford, that it oftentimes is kind of overlooked as being part of that Tom Clancy, Jack Ryan series. And I suppose maybe because of this director, that's why it even kind of looks and acts a little bit differently than the other ones. But that's number three. Number two is this film, Die Hard with a Vengeance, and for all the reasons we've indicated why it's so good. And number one is Predator. All right. Once again, Schwarzenegger and company.
Very cool. All right, well, thank you very much for catching us up on that one. So would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Sure. I suggest you go to everything-history.com, and that's the home base for not only the podcast, which is the most listenable part, but also the teaching resources. So what I've done with that is I've taken I have close to 150 podcast episodes working. You know, we're a month into season four right now, which has a lot of my on-the-spot I call it podcast karaoke, which is where people will talk to me about pop culture media that means something to them, react to it somehow. And it's at everything-history.com in the classroom section that you'll be able to, particularly if you're a teacher or a librarian, be able to, with your students, add to the conversation, almost like a pen pal type situation. So using podcasting not only as something to listen to and learn from on its own, but as a stepping stone towards contributing your own ideas to it. So that's everything-history.com.
Wow. Okay, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go review, subscribe to my podcast, show my episodes, listen to the show, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Your Own Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you like shooting me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Eric, you feel like coming back again tomorrow to finish off, I would say finish off the week, but, you know, we're going to have a couple episodes over the weekend also. So, you know, to finish up this part of the story, I guess.
Yeah, I think I kind of have to, right? I mean, this is I am the end of the end credits.
You don't have to, but It would be nice.
Well, I'm enjoying it. So these last few days have been a lot of fun. And yeah.
All right, excellent. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Johnny comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.